What good, is up, my good. Man? Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you guys too. I'm doing great here in the sunny state of Florida. We've been warm and the rest of the country is getting cold. So enjoying good weather over New Year's.
Yeah, I remember you used to live in a different state that definitely had winter. So congratulations to you. You know, you get to chill in shorts while everyone else is freezing cold and wet like I am here on the West Coast.
Yep, I came from the Midwest, and man, I'm not envying them right now.
No, absolutely not. Well, Ansel, a lot of things happened in 2021, and obviously every year is, you know, has an enormous amount of potential for Bitcoin. I think Bitcoiners are probably the only sect of people on the planet that are more optimistic about the future. And that's just because every single year is more optimistic than the last for Bitcoin. So we have a lot of things to talk about. But man, 2021 was a huge year. I mean, obviously, right out the gate, El Salvador was just enormous, unexpected news. But so many incredible things happened in 2021. You know, for the new listeners out there who don't know what FedWatch is, FedWatch is the ultimate macro show for Bitcoiners out there. We combine everything that's happening in macroeconomic politics, and we tie it into a global view that really respects what Bitcoin is as an emerging asset. I'm CK, one of the co-hosts. And of course, Ansel Lindner, amazing Bitcoin historian and economist, joins me every single week to talk about these topics. Ansel, I mean, do you want to just jump into it? Man, what a crazy year 2021 was.
Yeah, I wanted to start off by just maybe you giving 2 minutes on where Bitcoin Magazine has come during 2021, because Bitcoin Magazine is growing leaps and bounds and more content creators and contributors. And every time I turn around, it seems like you guys have a new segment of the website or a new series of podcasts. So can you fill us in on some of the growth that Bitcoin Magazine has had?
Man, I wish I came prepared with the list of things, but Bitcoin Magazine has just been exploding. You know, obviously our producer on this call, Mr. Chris Almeno is, Al Lemo is, you know, brand new and bringing an enormous amount. Alex McShane, who you all have been enjoying here on Bitcoin Magazine Live, is absolutely crushing it. And there's just so many amazing Bitcoiners that have been joining the team. I think we grew from 20 people to close to 60, 70 people now, part-time and full-time working on Bitcoin Magazine. So just absolutely explosive growth. Obviously the Bitcoin 2021 conference was huge. That's where Bukele made that announcement saying that El Salvador was going to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender. So that was a huge moment for BTC Inc. and Bitcoin Magazine. And yeah, I mean, just so many amazing things are happening. And I think that we are safely in that position as, you know, the most trusted publication in the Bitcoin space with the trust of the Bitcoin community. And we just want to continue to maintain that. And so honored to be, again, working with such incredible Bitcoiners on staff, as well as incredible Bitcoiners like yourself and others who have, you know, contributed to Bitcoin Magazine regularly.
Yeah, man, 2021 was a trip. That was a huge thing. And you said Bukele announced the El Salvador legal tender for Bitcoin down there. And so let's just jump right into the big things that happened in 2021. Now, this is going to be from a Bitcoin macro perspective. So we're going to go through some big trends that we saw in 2021 and some big trends that we're expecting in 2022. And I gave you the outline that you saw, Christian, but we can expand, or the chat can tell us what they're expecting, and maybe we can get some audience participation. That'd be pretty awesome. But okay, so yeah, let's jump right into the big one is El Salvador. What happened? What was the buildup?
Well, first of all, where were you leading up to that moment? I know you were at the conference. That was actually the first time we met in person. Ansel is a lot taller than me, guys. I think the camera is the great equalizer. But when I met him in person, I was like, whoa, big man. But yeah, you were in Miami. Where did you happen to be at the main stage during that presentation, or where were you?
I dipped in and out of the back of that main stage area. It was jam packed. People were standing in the back, and the fire marshal was trying to keep, you know, it to a minimum, standing in the back of the auditorium. But yeah, that's where I was, in and out during the day. Yeah, I met you on, I think, the first or second day. But yeah, that's, I didn't see a lot of the main stage because of that. And I didn't want to sit in there for 4 or 5 hours just to get my seat. So I kind of went in and out.
No, totally. It was tough. And, you know, just to plug Bitcoin 2022, the venue is going to be much, much bigger, and there's going to be a lot more room for those insane announcements that are going to be happening at the main stage. But just for context, the main stage at 21 was about 4,000 people, and the fire marshal was pretty uncomfortable with that amount of people. The new main stage will be 15,000 people. So it's just an absolutely different scale and you know, stage for 2022. The producer is telling me we got to plug b.tc/conference. So go there to get your Bitcoin 2022 conference, learn about all the amazing speakers. I've been chilling promo code Satoshi. I think that there's another promo code YTMAG for 10% off. So use YTMAG for 10% off, but Satoshi works too. And yeah, I mean, again, 22 was amazing, or 21 was absolutely amazing. And I was luckily, unlike you, you were in the back. I had front row seats, Bitcoin Magazine. We saved the top, you know, 12 seats for our house staff. And I was sitting there right front and center as Bukele and Jack Mallers made the announcement, and the entire place went absolutely crazy. You know, I knew the news a little bit beforehand. So I was telling people like Ansel, like, hey, make sure to be there. It's going to be huge news. But it was crazy knowing it was going to happen and just having to keep your lips absolutely shut. But yeah, the CEO of Bitcoin Magazine, David Bailey, he told me like 2 days before, and he was like, hey, you know that thing that Bitcoiners have always said is going to happen eventually? Well, it's happening. So obviously, you know, in 2020, it was Michael Saylor legitimizing Bitcoin as a treasury asset. And then in 2021, it's Bukele who made a really drastic step in, you know, making Bitcoin legal tender in El Salvador.
Yeah, and to add on to that, so for people that don't know, I mean, most people watching this probably follow Bitcoin pretty regularly, but for the newbies here, El Salvador didn't make it its sole legal tender. It's right alongside with the dollar, and I expect that to maybe expand, but we'll get into that in the trends for 2022, maybe some other countries adding Bitcoin. But what the other news was Bitcoin City, well, right? They had some...
Yeah. I want to stay on El Salvador. I see in the chat, people are talking about, you know, El Salvador's dealings with China, Bukele kind of being an interesting and maybe a less of a democratic style of a leader. And, you know, what does that mean for Bitcoin? What does that mean for El Salvador? I think it's important to talk about it. I mean, centrally planned cities, like you can look all over China, how well that works. So I'm very skeptical about Bitcoin City per se. But on the flip side, Bitcoin bonds, you know, and the Overton window kind of opening up to that, that is absolutely huge too. So, I mean, there is a lot here to unpack with El Salvador, and I definitely don't think it's a straightforward black and white type of a situation. I think it's super, super nuanced.
Yeah, I wrote an article back, I think in July or so. It was a geopolitical and macro analysis of this adoption of Bitcoin by El Salvador. And my conclusion was, in the next 5 to 10 years, they could double their GDP and maybe quadruple their GDP in the next 20 years. So it's going to be very, very good for El Salvador and the people there. I don't have a real big opinion on Bukele. I think he's extremely popular in the country. He's kind of a populist, not necessarily a, you know, someone from a politician, a regular politician that's come up through the ranks. He's a populist. So we'll see what he can do, but I don't trust any politicians right away. And it's going to take a long time to, you know, make sure he's on the right side.
Yeah, no, I think that that is for any Bitcoiners out there, like, do not trust any of these politicians, no matter what they say about Bitcoin. You know, just a recent story, Mayor Eric Adams of New York, you know, coming in as Bitcoin candidate, and, you know, first few things he does are very anti-freedom. And now he's thinking about, you know, implementing a booster mandate in New York to help stimulate the economy. So, I mean, in terms of insanity, I can't think of anything more insane than that. But, you know, these people are trying to take away your freedoms, and, you know, they might, Bitcoin is good marketing. That's a big trend of Bitcoin 21 for Bitcoin, was that Bitcoin kind of went from being this like scary thing that had career risks to a thing that could help you get elected if you're a politician, or help you get noticed if you're a business. It's now an innovative thing and a cutting edge thing, but that doesn't mean that these politicians are aligned with it. They just know that it's something that could get them elected. So we need to be very, very wary of these people as Bitcoiners to over who we actually endorse. And I think very few of them actually like or understand Bitcoin truly the way that we do.
Well, absolutely. They have a vested interest in the system much more than most Bitcoiners do, obviously. Politicians are just scammers. We see this also with, you know, the NFTs. There's people in all ranks of business, including all the way up to Melania Trump, right, that is doing NFTs. So you can't trust these people. They'll end up scamming you. But, you know, I think in the end, it's almost like, you know, with money, you have to adopt it, the most liquid good as money. You don't have a choice. And so eventually they're all going to come to the table. It's just whether right now they're scamming you and what's the real beliefs in their heart, right?
100%. So, I mean, again, with the El Salvador situation, I do not trust Bukele. I would say Bukele probably gets Bitcoin better than a lot of these other politicians. Like, he actually understands, you know, some very interesting things about Bitcoin. He was like putting out some kind of weird, you know, almost fringe kind of references on Twitter. So like, the man definitely has studied Bitcoin to a very interesting degree. But not everything he's going to do is going to be great. Again, I don't think that he is the most, you know, let's just call it pure and clean, Western approved politician out there. And I think the planned city is weird. And, you know, again, like, me as a Bitcoiner, I'm not going to hang my hat on Bukele. But with that being said, the significance of Bitcoin entering into the, you know, the nation state level geopolitical stage can't be, you know, can't be shied away from. And again, I don't think El Salvador is going to be the only one. I think there's going to be a lot more. And, you know, as soon as it's 5, 6, 7, 10, 20, you know, 50%, and then 50% of countries, you know, it's not, you know, one bad actor adopting Bitcoin. No one's going to look at them and be like, oh my God, Bitcoin's evil. They're just going to be like, oh, this bad actor is acting bad. So I definitely think that's the trend.
So how do you want to do this? Do you want to jump into like future predictions about that right now? Or should we hit all of this stuff from 2021 before we go into 2022?
Yeah, no, let's stick to how you have it laid out. Let's stick to 2021. I kind of got on a tangent there, so I apologize. but I mean, you know, do you want to switch over to mining in China? Because I think that's a huge story. Alex and I were just kind of talking about the home mining trend before you joined, but a lot happening in Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, so around the same time, I believe it was it May that China banned Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. And for us that have been around for a long time, you know, this was just another thing. Every 6 months, it seemed like a new regulation was coming out of China. They tightened the regs, then loosened the regs, then tightened the regs again. And but this one was for real. So all of the miners had to shut down and leave China. I mean, there's some talk about there's some underground mining there still, but 99% of the mining has left China and it went abroad, right? So the quickest place to move was further west into Central Asia, which Kazakhstan and some other countries got quite a few of those Chinese miners, but a lot of them came to the US. And that was the rise of the US industry, I guess you would say, the spark that set it off, right? And I had something else here for this. It was, I don't know, do you want to go into the US mining industry booming after this Chinese ban?
Well, I mean, the U.S. has a lot of excess energy capacity and relatively stable regulatory situation. So it does make sense as like the next kind of home. And it's super, super exciting to see the U.S. emerge. But obviously, it's also kind of disappointing to see the U.S. become super dominant, right? And we would probably want to see other places to continue to be competitive and to even grow in proportion to the U.S.'s dominance. But there's a lot of things here that, you know, kind of indicate that the U.S. has a bullish future in Bitcoin, and we do have rule of law, and we do have protections for individuals to be sovereign here more than most nations. And those things are good for Bitcoin miners. So, I think this is bullish US. I hope that Bitcoin continues to decentralize and that other countries and regions step up and continue to compete. I don't think that's going to be Europe. Hopefully that happens in the Southern Hemisphere. We're seeing El Salvador kind of getting into the mining game. We'll see how competitive they are, but there's other nations who are going to jump into this too. And I really hope that Bitcoin mining becomes super, super competitive. Ansel here has been saying bullish US for a long time because of these fundamentals, and these fundamentals do help the US in terms of competing in Bitcoin, both with businesses as well as hash rate, just more specifically.
Yo, what is going on, plebs? We're going to take a break from our programming to tell you about the resurrection of our print magazine, starting with the El Salvador issue. Starting this fall, Bitcoin Magazine will be available on newsstands nationwide and at retail stores such as Barnes and Noble. Don't want to get off your couch, though? No problem. You can also go to store.bitcoinmagazine.com. So skip the line and get each issue shipped directly to your front door with our annual subscription. I'm talking 4 issues a year that contain exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, along with powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Subscribe today and get 21% off using code podcast at checkout. That's PODCAST, podcast at checkout.
Yeah. Well, the big reason I'm bullish on the US and mining in particular is because of our geography and our energy industry. You know, we were the largest producer of oil in the world right before 2020. We were at 13.1 million barrels per day, which is incredible, adding 1 million barrels every year. So the U.S. has this almost unlimited potential for energy that's very unique in the world, right? There's very few other places that have that amount of energy. Now, El Salvador is an interesting case because it's energy, they have abundant energy with their volcanoes and their geothermal, and they can't really export it. That's different than other small countries, right? Like the United Arab Emirates, very small country with Dubai and Abu Dhabi, but they can export their oil. But El Salvador can't export their energy. So Bitcoin mining fits in perfectly there. There's going to be other places like that around the world, but the US, I think, is going to be over 50% of Bitcoin mining for the foreseeable future.
Wow. That's very interesting. Matt Odell has made the observation that despite the US being one of the most free Western nations, it's also the international kind of policer and enforcer of KYC. So maybe at home, we have a lot of freedoms. Abroad, the U.S. is kind of the international police and the implementers of KYC. So KYC plus mining has been a discussed attack point for a long time. So definitely something to continue to observe, especially with the ever-prescient Ansel, suggesting, of course, 50% of mining hash rate being U.S.-oriented to some degree. I think that there's a really interesting development in the narrative around supply chains, around deflation, around inflation. You know, we may not be seeing hyperinflation of the US dollar, but we are seeing hyperinflation of much shittier, you know, lower liquid fiats around the world. We're seeing a lot of hyperinflation there. You know, you can list off several countries that, you know, they just have heartbreaking stories. Ansel, do you kind of want to talk about like the changing narrative, the changing goalpost, the developing story around the US dollar, around other fiat, around inflation and what's happening with COVID?
Well, I kind of broke this down into two segments. So replaying 2021, we had a overall, I think, slowing economy. The first quarter, at the end of the first quarter, things kind of peaked. And we see that in interest rates around the world. They all peaked roughly at the beginning of April, and it's been down since then. So I think the economy is slowing down, but at the same time, we have these huge supply chain backups. I think it's over 100 ships now waiting off Long Beach. It seems to be getting slowly worse, not slowly better. And we see some rising prices. Now, the question is, are these rising prices due to supply restraints, or are they due to money printing? Because you can have both, obviously, but I think most and a majority, or I would say 90% of the price increases are not due to any sort of inflation. They're actually due to supply constraints. And we have gone back and forth on this show this whole year, trying to flesh out this difference between inflation and deflation. What does repo have to do with it? Collateral shortages, all of that stuff. But it all ties into the same thing. Rising prices was the story, I think, you know, as the whole for macro this year.
No, we've been talking about it for a long time. And I think one of your most salient points is a lot of things can cause rising prices. You know, the blanket label of this is inflation, which, you know, inherently kind of speaks to the money supply. It's just a broad sweeping kind of an observation. And if it turns out not to be true, it could, you know, people think that maybe it discredits the Bitcoin argument. I don't think it discredits the Bitcoin argument at all. Bitcoin is sound money that works, and fiat is shitty money that's manipulated and doesn't work. The way I would frame it is, you know, none of these central bankers know what they're doing. We're all leveraging money that is broken, manipulated, and unpredictable. And, you know, we kind of find ourselves in this crazy monetary hurricane that we're trying to navigate out of. And Bitcoin is sanity amongst that. And, you know, I think that, like we've said on this show many times, is we're going to start seeing two economies emerge, you know, the existing economy plus the Bitcoin economy. And where Bitcoin is, that's where the growth is going to be. That's where the productivity is going to be, because we can actually allocate capital in an efficient, predictable way. You know, it's a sound economic system. So that's why we think that, you know, Bitcoin is going to be this undeniable evolution of some sort, because, you know, people will just naturally flow into Bitcoin as they see more and more opportunity and growth.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of GDP, but if we just look at El Salvador this year, 2021, they're estimated to grow over 9%. So countries that are going to adopt Bitcoin, they're going to have higher growth rates than other countries. And slowly that will dawn on everybody that they need to be holding a little bit of Bitcoin.
Ansel, I mean, talking about GDP, what was the US's GDP growth this year? Just to compare.
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot. I believe it is going to be close to 6%. But again, I don't like GDP measurement because it measures spending. It doesn't measure costs. So like if you borrow a lot of money and you spend a lot of money, your GDP looks higher, but really you have high costs. That's one of my arguments against China as like this global powerhouse that people say, oh, China is going to become the new global hegemon. Well, they have a ton of fixed costs. The US is light years ahead of them when you compare spending to the cost of that spending. Plus, China has a fifth of the world's population that they have to take care of. So, I mean, the cost for China is really, really high. And we see that in how much debt they've had to take on. They've created the largest debt bubble, the fastest pretty much ever in history. And we'll see what happens when it busts.
So Ansel, moving on from inflation, deflation, what's happening in that narrative, I want to talk about stable coins, because I think the narrative around stable coins and the seriousness in which people take them has really evolved this year. We're seeing stablecoin adoption being very legitimate, and we're seeing stablecoin regulation kind of, you know, pending and escalating. Again, you have been very early on. I remember 2017 listening to Bitcoin and Markets podcast, where you talked about, this is not about Bitcoin versus alts. This is Bitcoin versus the dollar, and Tether is the most important other token out there. It's Tether and Bitcoin is what's happening. So I think you have seen this stablecoin trend since the beginning. Let's talk about the kind of the escalation in what's happening in the stablecoin market.
Well, I started thinking about it this year as U.S. interests versus European interests. And we talked about Davos Man on a recent episode of the podcast here. So the U.S. is much more friendly towards stablecoins because all the stablecoins are U.S. dollars. There's really no Euro Tether. There's only U.S. dollar Tether. So that is a huge wedge between the central banks, the interests of the central banks. The Fed, I think, is going to legitimize stablecoins. Slowly but surely, it has been doing that. It has been saying that these things need to be regulated like a bank. Powell has talked about it a couple times this year, saying that it needs to be regulated like a bank, and that will probably go forward in the future. So yeah, the big, I guess, competition has always been Bitcoin versus the dollar. Stable coins are becoming dollars or becoming part of the dollar ecosystem. And so now it's Bitcoin versus Tether / USD.
Yeah, I've definitely thought that the existing stable coins are part of the dollar system. It's like, oh my God, it's like the dollar is evolving type of a thing. And the market wants dollars, and we're seeing, you know, Tethers competing with fiat currency across the globe and with fiat rails across the globe. Personally, I feel like it's a step function for Bitcoin adoption. It's kind of like dollar hyper dollarization, partially through stable coins, followed by hyper Bitcoinization. That's kind of how I view how this works, but it is really incredible to just see dollar dominance just continue to extend itself across against other fiats, and to just see the stablecoin market really legitimize.
Yeah, and on the other side of the pond, you have the ECB, who has been coming out this year with multiple, documents or reports or working papers that say, you know, they want to speed up CBDCs. CBDCs are the answer, because the market isn't providing that. So they have to provide it to the market. And I think that's a recipe for disaster. So like you said, the US dollar influence will expand. I think that's the case. But what does that mean? That also means that other currencies are dying. So that capital that's fleeing from those other dying currencies, whether it's the euro or the yen or, you know, the rupee, it has to go somewhere. It's going to go to the dollar, and it's going to go to Bitcoin. That's where Bitcoin acts as a safe haven, just like the way the dollar does. So that's my deflationary thesis, is that Bitcoin is a safe haven, and people are going to go towards Bitcoin and the dollar at the same time.
So let's talk about the decoupling of shitcoins and Bitcoin, and then we can jump into predictions. We're going over time here, so we gotta keep it tight. But there's just so much to unpack. This was a crazy year. 2021 was really a crazy year. We did see the decoupling to some Bitcoiners' excitement around altcoins and Bitcoin, but we've also seen it to Bitcoiners' dismay, because, you know, Bitcoin's history was fueled with insane rallies and face-ripping parabolas. And we saw a lot of that speculation in the altcoin space, and we saw Bitcoin behaving very differently and acting as a much, much more liquid asset.
Yes. The decoupling, I mean, this is probably the first year that I really haven't paid even 5% of my attention to altcoins. NFTs came up quite a bit, but other than that, I don't know really what happened to, say, the top 20 altcoins because I haven't paid attention. But NFTs, I think, are interesting. They are different. I think they've changed the kind of dynamics between Bitcoin and altcoins, because in the past, when you had ICOs, or you had these other altcoins launching, people could move in and out of them very, very liquid. They were fluid and go in and out of Bitcoin and pump Bitcoin at the same time that they're pumping these speculative assets of the altcoins. But with NFTs, they're a lot less liquid. And so a lot of that, I guess, speculative value that has accrued to the NFTs this year has not really left that market. I think it will just kind of disappear, and Bitcoin won't get a boost the same way that it did from people fleeing the ICO scams. Fleeing the NFT scams is a recipe for just that value evaporating, not moving over to Bitcoin.
That is a pretty interesting observation. I also noticed that ICOs and NFTs are very much about token printing. And when it comes to token printing or taking advantage of the Cantillon effect, NFTs are just easier. Like, any person can draw a thing, and then there's a bunch of tools that hit mint, and then boom, you have some series. And I don't want to diminish artists. I think that, you know, artists, there are amazing artists that are leveraging these markets to make a lot of money, but there are also a lot of people that are just taking advantage of ease to print, ease to the Cantillon effect. And like you said, that energy to have easing to print with NFTs does not have a similar market dynamic as tokens and ICOs in relation to Bitcoin. I mean, with that being said, ICO or NFTs are very illiquid, but it's going to be interesting to just see them continue to proliferate and, you know, effectively dilute themselves, because we're seeing a massive dilution. And really, I think in the end, it all makes Bitcoin look better. It all, you know, it kind of like makes Bitcoin just a more and more superior and differentiated asset.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everyone wants to print money. That's what altcoins are all about. They're all about inflation and printing money. NFTs, it's a hype cycle just like everything else. And I do think there's some value in some NFTs, but it's very minimal and it's nothing like what we've seen recently. So let's get into the big trends coming up 2022.
So we have been talking European crisis for a long time. Yeah. Ansel, get the listeners up to date with what the hell is happening in Europe and why Europe is in such big trouble compared to the other major power, center points.
Well, okay. So there is this general malaise of economic growth in the world. We kind of all know that since 2008, the great financial crisis, everyone has been stuck in low growth, low inflation, low interest rates, and they can't get out of it. Now, the European Union has had a financial debt crisis more than the US. They've had another crisis in the meantime. But right now, what we're seeing is the US kind of stepping back from its global policeman role. And that, like we saw in Afghanistan, right? This messy pullout. I don't think the nature of the pullout of Afghanistan was planned, but the pullout was inevitable. And so that it was going to happen one way or the other. But that was really a big surprise for Europe, because they thought, oh, the US would never leave Afghanistan. The US would never pull back and, you know, take their support away from this global system that they have. This global, it's called the Pax Americana, or the Global Free Trade Order. Trade is the most free today than it's ever been in the history of mankind. And that's thanks in part to the US after World War II propping up this whole system. So as the US kind of goes back towards its non-interventionism, Europe is left without an army, reliant on energy from one of their largest perennial enemies in Russia. And so they are just in a world of hurt with no muscle to do whatever they want. And they're also sliding into authoritarianism again. Of course, they have a history of communism and fascism and all of that. So Europe could slide back into those kind of old ways. I think Europe is ready for another debt crisis, and this year is probably going to see the beginnings of that.
Yeah, and I don't have much to add to that, but part of the Bitcoin bull thesis that we've been articulating on this show is that because a lot of European debt is denominated in dollars, it's actually advantageous for Europeans to, as they're fleeing the crumbling European system, to flee into Bitcoin rather than into dollars, because at least Bitcoin doesn't, like, if they flee into dollars, they strengthen dollars and ultimately hurt themselves because they also strengthen the value of their debt. But if they flee into Bitcoin, that allows them to escape Europe without also strengthening the dollar simultaneously, which is a massive, massive upgrade over what was previously possible. And a big hole in the dollar's kind of stranglehold as a monetary system.
Yeah, very good point. This goes into this special and unique nature of Bitcoin being an outsider, being parallel to the system. It gives everybody an opportunity to flee a capital flight out of fiat and into something that is, completely independent.
So, Ansel, we're getting the 10-minute mark. The next thing that you talked about is kind of this idea of the fourth turning, as well as media politicians kind of being forced to move a little bit towards the middle. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Well, I just wanted to make a kind of a political prediction. I think that we've seen the extremes of politics in 2021. I think we're going to slowly but surely see most people and most politicians move more towards the center. And this is what happens towards the end of a fourth turning. So maybe we're not quite there yet, but we'll start seeing the glimmer of this. And at the end of a fourth turning, you return to the middle. Another thing that comes about at the end of the fourth turning is a concentration on children. And we see that in the kind of the school board revolts in the US against CRT and other things, where parents are getting more involved in their local communities and in their local school boards, local governments. And so I think that is a sign that we're getting closer to the end of the fourth turning. So that's my kind of political predictions.
Yo, my fellow Bitcoin lovers, have I got something specifically curated for you? The Deep Dive is Bitcoin Magazine's premium markets intelligence newsletter. This isn't some pay group shelling buy and sell signals. No, this is a premium Bitcoin analysis led by Dylan LeClaire and his team of analysts. They break down in an easily digestible way what is happening on chain, in the derivatives markets, and in the greater macro backdrop context for Bitcoin. This newsletter turns volatility into a joke. So hit up members.bitcoinmagazine.com and use promo code podcast for 30% off the Deep Dive. That's members.bitcoinmagazine.com, promo code podcast for 30% off. Divorce your pay group and learn why Bitcoin is the ultimate asset by Dylan and his team. My fellow plebs, the Bitcoin conference is back. Bitcoin 2022, April 6th through the 9th, is the ultimate pilgrimage for the Bitcoin ecosystem. The Bitcoin conference is the biggest event in all of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. We're leveling up and making this bigger and better than ever. I'm talking straight to the moon with the 4-day long festival in the heart of Miami at the Miami Beach Convention Center. This has something for everyone. Whether you're a high-powered Bitcoin entrepreneur, a core developer, or a Bitcoin newbie, Bitcoin 2022 is the ultimate place for you to be with your people and celebrate and learn about the Bitcoin culture. So make sure to go to b.tc/conference to lock in your official tickets and use promo code Satoshi for 10% off. Want more off? Pay in Bitcoin and you'll receive $100 off general admission and $1,000 off whale pass. Those are stackable. So go to b.tc/conference and attend the best conference in Bitcoin history.
can you like just break down a little bit? This idea of a fourth turning is this transitionary time where the old institutions kind of break down. There's a little bit of a void and then new institutions fill that void. What you're saying, I think you've been saying that fourth turnings have been getting more and more, mild, you know, as they've kind of escalated. And this one, you know, you actually see it being a relatively mild, and this is kind of the peak of this kind of transition, and we are already seeing the new power structure emerging. How can you just tease that out a little bit?
Brandon Quidden would be better at this than me, but yeah, that's the general idea that there is a four generational cycle, and this is the first generational cycle that we've had in hundreds of years where most of the world is on the same cycle, because World War II was such a global phenomenon. It set everybody up to have their generational cycles coinciding with the US's cycle. So at the end of this is when it seems like the whole world is falling apart. The institutions, everyone's belief in the institutions are falling apart, and people get really depressed, but then the fourth turning brings light, usually from a new leader. It's usually a populist type movement that brings people around, and we build new institutions, new incentives in the economy, and things of that nature. I think Bitcoin fits perfectly in there, right? Don't you? Bitcoin is a great way to revamp the monetary system, which is kind of the base layer of all the incentives in the economy and in the governments and stuff. So I'm very, you said, I think it's going to be light, or that maybe it's getting close to being over. I think the US is going to experience the least disruption from this whole thing, and other parts of the country or other parts of the world are going to experience much more vicious fourth turnings. How is that?
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense, and it ties into you know, what you are predicting around Europe. We're also pretty bearish on what's happening in China because of the debt. But very interested in seeing what's happening in Africa and South America because of Bitcoin, and because they've kind of been at the butt of the current fiat system, and they have the biggest incentive to adopt Bitcoin, an open system. Last prediction here, let's talk about countries adopting Bitcoin. You pointed out two here on our notes, Ansel. What are your predictions for countries adopting Bitcoin?
Well, I just looked at Latin America, you know, because we have Suarez in Miami, and is he native Spanish speaker? I'm not sure of his history, but, and then of course, Bukele down in El Salvador. So I just like looked at some other Latin American countries, and Ecuador and Panama both use the US dollar. So I think this would be a perfect blueprint, or El Salvador would be a perfect blueprint for these two countries to also put Bitcoin right alongside the US dollar. And yeah, I could see one of them or both of them in 2022.
And we know that in Panama, they are already making strides to, I think they have no official legal tender, although all official government activity is done in dollars. So they're already making moves to legalize crypto and, you know, legitimize Bitcoin further. So I think that's a very good prediction. And again, Ecuador, I think that, you know, we should make a list of all the dollarized countries. And again, those are the countries that are most likely to follow the El Salvador model. You didn't mention Tonga, but a member of the Tongan, you know, kingdom and political class is very active on Twitter talking about Tonga making Bitcoin legal tender this year and in quarter number one. So a small nation, but again, an active Bitcoiner who is a part of that political process. So I think, you know, again, at the margins, Bitcoin is going to continue to chip away and show its muscle against weak fiat currencies. And, you know, little by little, you know, bigger and bigger nations are going to have to take this network seriously.
Absolutely. I hadn't heard of that. So I'm not keeping up on all my Bitcoin magazine content, I guess. But yeah, that would be interesting. I'm not super bullish on most economies in Africa because I think that they have benefited from credit expansion around the world. And a lot of people think that they're going to really be become rich because of their resources in the future. But just like Afghanistan, it's nearly impossible to get the resources out of the country in a, you know, profitable way. So that's going to be the big challenge for Africa.
That's what Bitcoin is for, Ansel. Have some hope. Have some hope. Bitcoin will help them, help people all over Africa and as well as South America. But yeah, of course, the dichotomy between debt becoming more expensive as well as the benefits of a permissionless monetary system, they're going to be at odds with each other for sure. Last thing, and then we got to wrap it up. Shitcoins, altcoins. I think my prediction is that it's going to be very difficult to trade them profitably, but they're not going away. I think that the hydra of shit that is the shitcoin market and altcoin market and NFT market is here to stay. And it's only, you know, kind of proven that the clown world that we live in wants it, right? Meme stocks are a thing. Meme coins are a thing. Tradable memes on the internet are a thing. That does not take away from Bitcoin's relevance as a monetary system, as the perfect monetary system. Not bullish long-term, not bullish on anything in particular, but I don't think that they're going to disappear. I do not think the market is going to wisen up to it. If anything, we just have more and more stupid people entering into the market. Ansel.
Well, yeah, there was a huge market, a $5 billion market before Bitcoin was even around, that was tokens for video games and things like that. I don't think that's ever going to go away. Altcoins in general, I can see maybe turning into some sort of pink sheet market where it's a, you know, a fraction of the other side of the market, which is going to be the Bitcoin side. So yeah, I don't think they'll go away, but slowly but surely people will realize that they're not as interesting because they're, it's just a den of scams over there.
All right, Ansel, let's wrap this one. You guys can follow me at CK underscore snarks and at Bitcoin Magazine. You can follow Ansel at Ansel Lindner. Thanks for catching us this Tuesday on FedWatch and Wednesday for the podcast listeners. We will be here with another FedWatch next week. Peace.